Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour, returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 13th, 2018. We'll continue with the obituaries. Thomas E. Smith, 66, of Decatur, died Monday, April 9th, 2018. A mass of Christian burial to celebrate his life will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Monday, April 16, 2018, in St. James Catholic Church, 742 East Clay Street in Decatur, with Reverend John Burnett, celebrant. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday, April 15th, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to St. Teresa High School. Marion Joseph Joe Galvin, 77, of Assumption, died April 11, 2018. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, April 16, 2018, in Sites Funeral Home, Assumption. Visitation will be from 12 to 2 p.m. prior to service time. Burial will be in St. Mary's Cemetery, Assumption. Memorials may be made to Assumption Women's Club. Norma J. Anderson, 68, of Shelbyville, died Wednesday, April 11, 2018. Funeral services will be held on Sunday, April 15, 2018, at 3 p.m. with Reverend Kevin Ray officiating. Visitation will be from 1 p.m. until time of service. Burial will take place in Glenwood Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Shelbyville Area Community Foundation, earmarked for either the Sunken Garden or Save Our Chautauqua Building Fund in Shelbyville, Illinois. Paul W. Hohenstein, 88, of Decatur, formerly of Iliopolis, died on April 11, 2018. Visitation will be at Life Foursquare Church Decatur on Saturday, April 14, 2018, and beginning at 1 p.m. until service time at 3 p.m. His burial will follow at Riverside Cemetery in Iliopolis with full military honors. Dawson and Wyckoff North Funeral Home is assisting the family with services. In keeping with Paul's wishes, memorials may be directed to the American Diabetes Association for research. Kayla Lynn Spar, 73, of Shelbyville, died on Thursday, April 5, 2018. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 14th, in Hauanyaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, with Rick Williams officiating. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturday. Burial will be in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville. Memorials may be given to Saving Orphaned Animals, Multiple Myeloma Research Foundation, or the Spina Bifida Association. Charles S. Cutler, 87, of Decatur, died Wednesday, April 11, 2018. Visitation will be from 1 p.m. until the memorial service at 2 p.m. Saturday, April 14th, in the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home and Cremation Center. Carlos William C.W. Fathauer, 97, of Shelbyville, formerly of Assumption, died at 10:50 a.m. Tuesday, April 3, 2018. A memorial service will be held at 4 p.m. Saturday, April 14th, in Hauanyaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, with Danny Himes officiating. Visitation will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday. Graveside services with military rites will be held at 2 p.m. on Monday, April 16th, 2018, in Camp Butler National Cemetery, Springfield, Illinois. Memorials may be given to Land of Lincoln Honor Flight, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, or Donor's Choice. Catherine Darlene Chaplin, 82, of Gastonia, North Carolina, formerly of Decatur, died on April 11, 2018. A service to celebrate and honor her life will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, April 14, 2018, at Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until service time. She will be laid to rest next to her husband at Macon County Memorial Park. Beverly R. Sweezy, 83, of Decatur, died on Saturday, March 17, 2018. Cremation rites will be accorded. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. Monday, April 23, 2018, at Bethel Cemetery, Blue Mound, Illinois. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, will be handling arrangements. We'll turn now to the editorial page with letters to the editor. Wind farmed will impact quality of life. A significant number of residents of DeWitt County oppose the development of a proposed wind farm by Trade Winds Energy, LLC, DeWitt County. This large wind farmed footprint would extend from Waynesville to Farmer City and north from Route 54 to Carl Springs Road. These will not be the smaller towers, 80 meters or shorter, but are closer to 600 feet. This will impact the horizon and also your property values to a far greater extent than the wind farms we have been inundated by. I am among those who are opposed to the project, as I believe it will impact the overall quality of life not only for those who live near the turbines, but adjacent communities as well. We need to focus on creating an environment to attract sustainable economic development, including the creation of permanent job opportunities for local residents. The Interior Department rules provide legal protection for the lifespan of wind farms and other projects if companies obtain permits and make efforts to avoid killing protected birds. This seems dubious at best. DeWitt County has a burgeoning bald eagle population threatened by this proposed wind farm. When it comes to the development of a proposed wind farm by Trade Winds Energy, LLC, DeWitt County, we need to just say no. The eagles seem to prefer nuclear energy power plants over being beheaded, mangled, injured, and otherwise inconvenienced by these heavily taxpayer-subsidized public nuisances commonly known as wind farms. We need to put this into a public referendum. Everyone is impacted. Very few are enriched. Signed, Bradley D. Barnes of Clinton. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to Herald and Review executive sports editor Mark Tupper. After 44 years of service to Decatur, Tupper has announced his retirement, effective at the end of May. University of Illinois athletes and coaches, past and present, as well as thousands of readers and fans, have congratulated Tupper via social media, email, and phone calls, a testament to his fairness, accuracy, and desire to deliver the best every day to his audience. The office will seem awfully empty without Mark. We've been thrilled to have his work gracing our pages and sincerely hope he will continue to do so even as he enjoys his well-earned retirement. Thumbs up. Thank you to Decatur-based sculptor John McClary. McClary's statues of Abraham Lincoln and other historical figures are found throughout Illinois. McClary donated a new work to the Decatur Public Library's local history room, marking the state's bicentennial. The work depicts Lincoln with Stephen Douglas and Governor Joseph Duncan in 1834, devising the state's railroad plans with Decatur as a focal point. Counties and cities are largely responsible for creating their own ways of marking the bicentennial. McClary said he's been thinking at length about doing something special for Decatur to mark the occasion. He also says he hopes younger visitors who view his sculpture and the rest of the historic exhibits at the library maybe get a little inspired and think about what they dream for the future in Decatur or someplace else, he says. Thumbs up to Area Solar Energy Projects. There are two efforts in rural Macon County, a 20-acre farm west of Oriana near the intersection of Brush, College, and Alinawick Roads, earned approval last week by the County Zoning Board of Appeals and should be built next year. Atlanta-based Sol America Energy applied to build a 10- to 15-acre solar project on the property at northeast intersection of Brush, College, and Cundiff Roads. Alternate energy sources are vital as we move deeper into the 21st century. These projects appear to be low impact and low risk and have the potential to lead to much bigger and better things. Thumbs up to a recycling test being conducted by Macon County. Recycling can be tricky. We have to pay close attention to what can and cannot be put in the bins if we want the efforts to be successful. The Environmental Management Recycling Center collection bin at 1750 North 21st Street in Decatur is accepting number 6 styrofoam in a pilot program. This is a chance to recycle some of those items the ongoing Decatur recycling pickup effort does not accept, including styrofoam cup, egg cartons, and foam ice chests. Packing peanuts are not included in the effort, which, if successful, can be a huge relief on landfills. The program runs throughout April. And the political cartoon today shows a drawing of Paul Ryan looking sweaty and pulling at his collar and thinking, "I can no longer stand passively by while Trump spins out of control. It's time to take bold action." And the next panel shows him running rapidly through an exit door. Back to state and local news. Woman's mishap lands on TV show. Susan Easton's unicorn incident to air on Sunday. Decatur. When Susan Easton was bucked off an inflatable unicorn, the incident was witnessed only by family and daughter-in-law Ariane Easton's cell phone. On Sunday, the viewers of Primetime's longest-running entertainment show on ABC, America's Funniest Home Videos, will get to see it too. Susan Easton was visiting her daughter, Erica, in Nashville with Ariane Easton and granddaughters Anya 3 and Aubrey 1. Anya loves unicorns, and Erica Easton had bought her an inflatable one to use in the pool at her subdivision. "I thought I could get on it, and whoa, before I knew it, I was in the water," Susan Easton said. Joking that Ariane and Erica conned her into trying to ride the unicorn, Susan Easton had no idea that the two younger women had submitted the video to the TV show until she received an email asking her to sign a release. "Mom got up and went off to ride it with such confidence," Erica Easton said. "I said to my sister-in-law, 'Get your phone out. This is going to end badly.' She went head over heels into the water." The Eastons don't know if the videos will be among the ones in the running for the $10,000 cash prize offered weekly based on viewer voting, but are happy the video made it to the lineup to be shown. Erica Easton will be watching from her Nashville home, and the rest of the family is going to gather at Susan Easton's house to watch. "They conned me into going on that unicorn," Susan Easton said, laughing. "I didn't know they were going to video it on the phone, and I had no idea she sent it to America's Funniest Home Videos. I'm up for it. It's fine. It's fun. You know, have some laughs." The program airs locally at 6 p.m. on WICS Channel 20. Historic site gets second chance at life. Springfield may pay to reopen Lincoln Herndon law offices. Springfield Alderman Tuesday moved forward an ordinance that would have the city enter a 5-year contract with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources to keep the Lincoln Herndon law offices open as a visitor center. The offices at the southeast corner of the old Capitol Plaza closed shortly after Labor Day 2014 in anticipation of an estimated $1.1 million renovation of the building where Abraham Lincoln practiced law. The project seemed on track, including creation of a replica Seth M. Tinsley dry goods store on the first floor, then came to the state budget impasse and a halt to capital projects statewide. The city would pay the state $20,000 a year through the Springfield Convention and Visitors Bureau budget, which is funded through a hotel-motel bed tax. Springfield Mayor Jim Langfelder said that the visitor center would allow for the city to have a presence on the plaza while keeping the historic site open. "It allows that opportunity where Lincoln Herndon office is open again," Langfelder said. "It's disheartening when you go to a tourist area like Springfield and you see a closed historic site." The law office drew 19,000 visitors in its last full year of operation in 2013. Aldermen voted 5-4 to put the ordinance on the consent agenda, which is often passed through without discussion. Redpath Ward 6 Alderman Kristen DiCenzo, Ward 9 Alderman Jim Donnellan, and Ward 10 Alderman Ralph Hanauer, voted to keep the ordinance on the debate agenda. Ward 8 Alderman Chris Thielen was absent. Alderman also moved forward an ordinance that would allow the city to spend no more than $22,000 on a feasibility study to create a new tax increment financing district along Lumber Lane, located near Interstate 55 and Sangamon Avenue. The TIF district was initially targeted to the 3400 block of Lumber Lane to entice Ellis Building Supplies, which is planning on opening a lumber yard at the Old Boss Manufacturing Company distribution facility. However, Langfelder said part of the study will look to see if more of the area would qualify for and benefit from TIF dollars. As a separate incentive, city officials are negotiating a sales tax rebate mechanism with the company, which would kick back a percentage of the sales tax it generates to the company. On business, Lucy Loft has place to gather. Sister Girls and Friends is a community group started in 2013 by Melverda Wilkins with the goal of empowering at-risk girls and women through mentoring and programming. Wilkins realized from the outset that the program would benefit from a permanent home. The search ended recently when the building at 1165 North University Avenue, which formerly housed YWCA Where to Work, became available. While the building is primarily intended for use for Sister Girls and Friends activities, it does have a loft that, when not being used by the group, can be rented by the public for meetings, events, and parties. From that, the Lucy Loft and Company was born. Wilkins describes the 1,400 square foot area as an entertaining, inviting space that offers something unique to the Decatur area. The main meeting room can hold 100 people, give or take, depending on the seating arrangement. There is also a smaller room that can be used for more intimate meetings. Rental proceeds will help offset building and Sister Girls and Friends programming costs, Wilkins said. The name pays homage to Wilkins's mother, Lucy Young, whom she credits with setting a great example of a woman who worked hard, overcame obstacles, and gave back to the community. I wanted her to be remembered for what she's instilled in me and the community, Wilkins said. The company portion of the name is a reference to all the other inspirational people in her life. Those wanting to use the facility can reserve it by going to tllac.com. Those small letters, tllac.com. A ribbon cutting at open house will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. today, Friday. It will include food, giveaways, and live entertainment. The celebration will continue on Saturday, April 14th, from 6 to 9 p.m., at which time there will be a screening of the movie Step. The event will include a panel discussions, concessions, music, and a step demonstration. This free event is for girls in grades 7 to 12. For information about the Lucy Loft and Company or Sister Girls, call 217-791-5177. Again, that's 791-5177 or 217-330-9775. That's 330-9775. Since coming to Decatur from Austin, Texas more than 10 years ago, Paul Mizell has been a business owner and held a job with a major local corporation. But through it all, cooking remained a passion, and thoughts of someday opening a restaurant would pop up from time to time. It's one of those itches that never goes away, said Mizell, who spent the early years of his working life in the restaurant industry. After striking up a friendship with Paco Greenwell, an opportunity presented itself to take ownership of his downtown restaurant, Paco's Sol Bistro. Teaming up with Cody Flanders, the owner of Vanderland's Automotive Repair Incorporated, and local accountant Michael Wilhoit, the opportunity became a reality in October. Regular customers may have noticed a few small changes over the past few months, like dropping Paco's from updated promotional items. It's simply Sol Bistro now, and the introduction of food specials intended to test the appetite of customers to some potential new menu items. The new owners have taken it slow, realizing that they have a very good base from which to build upon. expect some of Mizell's influences to make their way to the menu, describing his brand of cooking as international comfort food with Southwestern focus. "This is the only way I can be artistic," Mizell said. "I can't draw, can't paint, but I can cook." Aside from the food side of things, Mizell said that he's already taking full advantage of the large facility with the return of more stage entertainment. "A lot of the focus right now is on musical talent, but it's possible some comedy acts could be added to the mix." To stay on top of what is happening at Sal Bistro, follow them on Facebook and Instagram. In national business briefs, last Sears in Chicago closing. Sears is closing its last remaining store in Chicago. Employees at the store at Six Corners in the old Irving Park neighborhood were told of the closure Thursday morning, spokesman Howard Reif said in an email. The store will close in mid-July after a liquidation sale, set to begin April 27th. The Sears Auto Center will close in mid-May. The store was one of 265 properties sold to Seritage Growth Properties in a 2015 sale leaseback deal. For more than 120 years, Sears has called Illinois home, and that is not changing, Reif said. "Although we are disappointed by this last store closure in Chicago, by no means does this change our commitment to our customers and presence to Chicago residents." Hoffman's Estates-based Sears Holdings Corporation still has about 150 employees at its Loop office. The company declined to say how many employees work at the Six Corners store, which opened in 1938. Dear Abby, teen girl feels guilty for hookup during breakup. Dear Abby, I'm a 17-year-old senior and have been dating the same boy for 2 years. A month ago, he told me he wanted to break up because he needed some time to figure out what he wanted. I was devastated, but agreed. 2 weeks later, he told me he was sorry and he loves me. We are back together now, but the weekend after our breakup, I went to visit a college girlfriend. We went to a party, and I ended up having sex with a boy I didn't even know. I feel guilty and unworthy. What should I do? If I tell my boyfriend, I'm sure I'll lose him for good. If I don't tell him, I'll always worry that he will find out from someone else. Signed, Unworthy in the Midwest. Dear Unworthy, you are acting like you have something to feel guilty about. You don't. At the time you visited your college girlfriend, your boyfriend had broken things off with you. You do not owe him an explanation or confession as long as you haven't given him an STD. Contact your physician and be checked for sure. Dear Abby, Dear Abby, I'm a vegan and make a point of being polite to servers in restaurants. I carefully describe what I would like and to eat from their menu. Although they appear to be attentive, half the time they serve me a meal with an added touch, a scoop of sour cream or sprinkle of cheese on the top. When it happens, is it fair to send the food back to the kitchen, or is it better to painstakingly scrape the unrequested item off my dinner? I don't want to waste food, and I would like my meal prepared to my specifications. Any suggestions? Signed, Vegan in the West. Dear Vegan, you have every right to send a meal back if it wasn't prepared the way you requested. You, as the customer, are paying for your food, and you should not have to painstakingly scrape anything off of it. Some people with dietary restrictions carry a laminated card with them that lists the foods they cannot eat. It is shown to the chef by the server at the time your order is placed. You may want to try it. Dear Abby, my husband died recently. We didn't have children. His family keeps contacting me, inviting me to lunch, movies, etc. The problem is I have nothing in common with them and no longer want to spend time with them. When I make an excuse to politely bow out, they suggest another date and another. How can I get them to leave me alone? Signed, Enjoying My Solitude. Dear Solitude, your former in-laws mean well, and many would consider you fortunate that they try so hard to be supportive and remain close. Keep in mind that you are their last tie to their son. However, because your polite refusals aren't getting through, tell them that while you appreciate their gesture, you are not lonely. In fact, you are enjoying being alone with your memories, and you will contact them if you change your mind. Now I'll read a little bit from Decatur Tribune Online. Paul Osborne's City Beat. Representative Sue Shearer shares insights on priority legislation. I sat down with State Representative Sue Shearer for some one-on-one discussion about what's happening in her 96th district, which includes a lot of Decatur, and in the state capitol. It's apparent that she's involved in her busiest time in the 5+ years since she was elected to her first term, and one of the reasons is legislator turnover. We have so many experienced legislators who are not running for re-election this time, she told me. That is putting a heavier load on those of us with fewer years of experience who have the responsibility of introducing and pushing through needed legislation. While she can't introduce every piece of legislation requested, she has some top priority items that she is co-sponsoring, such as HB 4710 that amends various acts relating to any university or community college district in entering into an agreement with a credit card company to market credit cards to students. Shearer said the amendment is necessary because so many students are ringing up huge credit card debt through the marketing efforts of the companies. HB 4707 deals with the prescription drug abuse epidemic through amending the Illinois Controlled Substances Act in changing the classification of hydrocodone from a Schedule II controlled substance to a Schedule I controlled substance. HB 4706, which is sponsored by Shearer, deals with the growing shortage of substitute teachers in Illinois. The bill, as stated, amends the school code, provides that a school board may require a new substitute teacher's evidence of physical fitness to perform duties assigned, and shall require of new substitute teacher's evidence of freedom from communicable disease, and provides that evidence may consist of a physical examination by a health care provider, instead of treating substitute teachers like any other new employees who are required to provide evidence of physical fitness to perform duties assigned and freedom from communicable disease through a physical examination by a health care provider. Shearer, a former teacher's aide, or former teacher, said one reason for a dwindling number of substitute teachers is the hundreds of dollars they have to pay out of their own pocket for physical fitness tests to substitute for sometimes only a week or two. Many decide it's not worth it to substitute teach. The House bills mentioned are three high-priority pieces of legislation that Shearer is committed to seeing passed, but there are many other concerns at legislation that she continues to work on. Shearer also told me that she's committed to helping make the East Beltway project around the south and east sides of Decatur a reality because of the impact it will have on the local economy and the city's future. She talked about successful projects she's been involved in and since she arrived in the state capitol, such as funding for crossing health care, the South Shores Bridge renovation, and funding for other projects, with some of that success coming in a bipartisan manner. Shearer told me that many times as she speaks to various groups in the district, she is told, "You don't talk like a politician, you talk more like a teacher." "Well, that's what I did for over 30 years, was teach in a classroom," she said. Opponent Sue Shearer faces Republican Herman Sr. in the November general election in her bid for another term. Sr. is a Springfield alderman and indicated when he declared his candidacy that Shearer was a pawn in the hand of House Speaker Mike Madigan. He also said that she voted for the state income tax increase. "I'm not sure most of you even knew her opponent's name until I just printed it." These comments about Shearer are not meant to be disrespectful, but his campaign seems almost non-existent. There is no apparent campaign strategy that I see being displayed to get better known. When a candidate is challenging an incumbent, getting better known throughout the district is critical, and that hasn't happened with Senior, despite several solid pieces of advice from those who have waged campaigns of their own in raising a couple of issues that might get him some consideration. That's just my observation on the race. That's all we have time for this Friday edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 13th, 2018. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon.